holding at the top of Memtes Amud Aleph. We're in the middle of discussing the question of how we know that a Kohen Gadol and a Nazir are able to become Tamei for a Mes Mitzvah. Now, we said by a Kohen Gadol, by both of them, we know they're not able to become Tamei for their relatives. The Pasuk says so by each one of them. Now, by the Kohen Gadol, you have two specific relatives mentioned that he can't become Tamei for, his father and his mother. By the Nazir, you have four: his father, his mother, his brother, and his sister. So we're in the middle of working out why we need all of them to be said. We had two different ways of learning it: Rabbi Shmuel's and Rabbi Akiva's. In particular, we had, according to Rabbi Akiva, which is what we're going to focus on now. We said that according to him, you end up with two different things that you're learning that a Kohen Gadol or a Nazir can become Tomei for a Mes Mitzvah. One of them is he says when it says La'ovir v'la'imo, it means he can't become Tomei for them, but he can become Tomei for a Mes Mitzvah. Then we said that when it says La'ochiv, means even if he's both a Kohen Gadol and a Nazir, still he can't, because then still he could become Tomei for a Mes Mitzvah. Even though he has a double level of Kedusha, nevertheless, he still becomes Tomei for a Mes Mitzvah.
So the question now is going to be,
according to Rabbi Akiva, why do you need so many different things to be telling us the same thing? You have La'ovir v'la'imoy and La'ochiv. So now the Gemara says, well, Rabbi Akiva, Mechti, let's consider, Loishna Kohen Gadol L'chode, V'loishna Kohen Gadol V'hu Nazir. There's no difference whether the person is a Kohen Gadol alone or whether he's a Kohen Gadol and a Nazir. Nafkim La'ochiv, either way, we're able to learn from La'ochiv. And once we say that applies, that he's a Kohen Gadol and a Nazir, then all the more so, of course, it would apply if he's one or the other. So, La'ovir v'le'imoy lamali. So why do I need the words La'ovir v'le'imoy anyway? Meaning, in other words, so Tosfos explains the question. It could say just one of them, and we don't need the other. We said before, we learned yesterday that we had the word le'imoy was meant for gzeira shava, but we said according to Rabbi Akiva, we didn't end up needing that gzeira shava. So according to him, then why is it saying both of them? It could say just one of them. So in fact, Tosfos says the Gemara could just as well have asked about the La'ovir v'le'imoy of the Kohen Gadol, why it says both of them, let it only say one of them. The Rosh, in fact, explains the question of the Gemara, just that the question is not really so much on the Nazir with his four relatives, the question is on the Kohen Gadol with the two relatives that I mentioned, why it needs to mention both of them, let's say we need le'imoy for the gzeira shava, but why do we need the word la'aviv? And the answer is tzrichin. We do need, in fact, both aviv and imoy. The e kas of aviv, because if it only mentioned that he can't become tomei for his father, you would say, have amina, hainu taimu, dilemma tamale, you know why he can't become tomei for his father, mishum b'chazaka ba'almu. Because ultimately, how do we know that this really is his father? We only know it based on a chazaka. The chazaka is called Roiv Be'ilos Eitzel Abal, a married woman. We assume that most relations that she had were with her husband. Now, it's a very strong chazaka. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Chulin that one of the sources we have in Torah for the concept that we can rely on a chazaka is the very fact that the Torah tells us that if a person hits or curses his father, then he's chayiv misa. You could always ask, what do you mean? How do you know 100% for sure this is his father? Nevertheless, we say that's strong enough reason to Beis Din to execute him. So a chazaka is a very strong thing. Nonetheless, there is always that little possibility out there that maybe after all, this is not his father. In fact, it's brought, I think the Zohar says, and different achronim talk about, this is why in Mishaberachs, for example, you often use the mother's name, because you want to be saying something that I think even for the same reason I think in Yizkor, even though usually after a person has passed away we usually use their father's name, in Yizkor we use their mother's name. David HaMelech already says in Tehillim, Ani Abdecha ben Amasecha. So we see that there's a certain connection specifically with the mother. And one idea is because again, like all Gemara is saying over here, the mother, you know, 100% for sure, she's his mother. There were people there when the person was born, as opposed to the father, there's always that fraction of a possibility that not. So you might have thought if it only said Aviv, you would say, you know why it can't become Tamei for him? Because after all, it's only based on a chazaka.
What's about the part we said yesterday that the second half brother?
So that once we establish that he can become Tamei, that he can't become Tamei for his father and for his mother, and it's not a matter of how certain the relationship is, then yeah, the same thing is going to apply to half brothers as well.
So you don't have to learn
it. You know, right.
Because it's a half sister, not. But
a half, right. Not a half sister, not. We said a brother from the mother's side, not. Right.
Right. So, we learned that from where?
Yeah, we said that in Torah terminology, the word achim, generally speaking, only means brothers from the father's side. We learned about it in Yevamos, for example. We learned it from the sons of Yaakov, who call themselves achim, and they were all the sons of one man, Yaakov. They all had a father in common. Anyway, so you could say, if it only said Aviv, then you would say, you know why? The Torah is saying you can't become Tamei for him because it's a weaker kind of thing. That's only a chazaka. Actually, the Rashba asked the question, what do you mean? Manafshach, look, if this is his father, then he should be allowed to become Tamei for him. If it's not, then he's not a Kohen, and there's no Issur Tshuva on him anyhow. If he's not a Kohen, because so hypothetically, suppose somebody else is his father, then the child, then the son is not a Kohen anyway. There's a couple of different explanations, one of them being that you could be talking about. Suppose that now back in Ksubas, we had a concept called Trei Rubi. We had a case where there was a woman who was pregnant. We don't know for sure who the father is, but you have two roivs in the city. You have a roiv of people in the city of Ksherim, and you have roiv of the people who were available to her are also Ksherim. So then that's reason enough to say that the child is a kosher and we don't have to be worried that he's a mamzer or what have you. In any case, suppose the Trei Rubi over here were both Kohenim. Midah Raisa, at least the child, was for sure going to be a Kohen one way or the other. Midah Banan, we say, we learned about this in Yevamos, that if we don't know who a child's father is, we don't allow him to serve as a Kohen. But nevertheless, he still has the dinim of a Kohen on a Daraisa level, including not becoming Tomei for any other than non-relatives. So even if there, so you could have a case where you know for sure the child is a Kohen. Nevertheless, though, you don't know for sure that this person is his father, and therefore, so that could be one answer. That could be one answer, you're worried about him becoming Tomei, even though you might hypothetically say that this is not in fact his father.
How would that work if you don't know who's the father? You say he's a Kohen.
So that's the thing. If you have, suppose that there was nobody else around who could possibly have fathered him other than a Kohen. Imagine you have a city entirely Kohenim. And hypothetically, you have a city that's entirely Kohenim. And there's no way in and out of the city. It's doing a siege, let's say, or whatever. And his mother became pregnant. Who is the father going to be if not a Kohen? So therefore you could have such a scenario where he's definitely a Kohen. There's no way around it. But nevertheless, you could argue that maybe potentially the person whom we assume is his father, and we do on the basis of a chazaka, maybe is not. So that's one way of answering the Rashi.
Even in that scenario where the whole town is a Kohen and it's surrounded by enemy, it could be a goy that she's pregnant from.
The whole town is Kohenim. If there's no Goyim in town, then how is it going to be a Goy?
We don't know that there's no Goy in the town.
Let's say we know. We know from before the siege started that there's no Goyim in town. Okay.
Well, then before the siege started, someone could have come into town that it was not a Kohen.
Okay, but let's say it's not a town. Let's say, for example, it's a cave or something. Let's say that people are hiding out in a cave, and we have no way. I mean, you have the Rashba himself gives an answer, and the Arachayim HaKadosh gives a somewhat similar answer. Imagine you have, let's say that you have two people who we know. We have a strong chazaka. Each one of them is a Kohen, and we also know that they're father and son. So even if there's reason to question the chazaka of the father, nevertheless, the son has a chazaka on his own of being a Kohen. So therefore, again, let's say again, you have there are explanations that we're talking about. Let's say it's a city of entire Kohanim. Okay, anyway, I mean, there's a different answer anyway. The Netziv and the Keren Ora gives a similar answer. Is we don't mean literally there's a chashash that this guy might not be his father. I mean, we, again, you know, chazaka is a very powerful thing. What it means is you could argue that when his father passes away, he has less tsar than when his mother passes away, because psychologically, like, he knows for sure this is his mother. Psychologically, like, he knows this is not 100% for sure thing that this is his father.
So
that could be a different reason, because the father is working or whatever. The point is that therefore you might have thought that if it says la'aviv only, that he can't become tummy for his father, you might say that's a reason, these are reasons to say that maybe it means exclusively his father. But continues the Gemara, avol imo diyadin diyalidite, but when it comes to his mother, we know, of course, that his mother gave birth to him, l'tamei la. You might have thought maybe he should become tamei for her. Maybe, in other words, exactly that. Maybe it would mean that only his father and other relatives he can't become tamei for. Maybe a mother is an exception. And on the other hand, the cost of Rachman Imoy. On the other hand, if the Torah only mentioned the word Imoy, have Amin Imoy Lo Litamila, you might have thought there's an opposite reason to say why he shouldn't be able to become Tomei for his mother. Delav Ozel Zara Basra, because after all, her children don't follow her in what Shevet they belong to. We know that goes according to the father. Aval Oviv, but when it comes to his father, Kivin de Omer Ma'al Mishpachosam Leves Avosam, since the Pasuk says that it goes according to the families, according to the father, according to their families, according to their father's houses. So in other words, how is it determined what shevet a person belongs to? It depends on his father. So you might have thought that maybe that's a valid reason why the son should be able to be metame for his father, because after all, he's only a koyin because his father was a koyin. Kamash Malan, therefore, the Pasuk has to tell us, says Rabbi Akiva, both Aviv and Imoy, that he can't become Tomei for either one of them. Once we have both Aviv and Imoy, and it makes it clear that no kind of relative is he able to become Tomei for, then Rabbi Akiva would say that then Rabbi Akiva would say, like we learned yesterday, that when it says Al Nefesh Mace, when it says Al Nefesh Mace, so Nafshes Mace, it means all the relatives that a Nazir is not allowed to become Tomei for any of his relatives. So now, even without Aviv Imoy, we know that he's also to become Tomei for any of his relatives. Therefore, we have the words La'aviv and La'imoy available for Jerushas. So therefore, he's saying that La'aviv, we learn that he can become Tomei for a mes mitzvah. But then once it says La'aviv, it has to say La'imoy as well, for the reason that we said, so you don't misunderstand and think that in fact it means he can't become Tomei for his mother, for his father, but he could for his mother, or vice versa.
The lashon of Torah is used of Imoy.
No, but it doesn't have to be. It could have been right, but it could have said one. But if it only said one, then we would have thought that it means that it means only that one and not the other. So therefore, Tosfos also gets into a very, very long discussion over here that you could have thought this is an example of a klal of prat. You could argue that you have. Alkol nafshes meis lo yavoi is a klal. Lo aviv lo imo lo yitama is a prat. Klal the prat ein b'chlal ela mashem prat means the klal is limited only to what's in the prat, and therefore you would say, if you were to go that way, you would say it's only his father, his mother, he can't become tamei to, but he could become tamei to any of the other ones. But Tosfos says that no, actually it's not. This is an example of a klal that requires the prat. If you only had the klal, you wouldn't understand what it means, and therefore you need the prat in order to explain what the klal means. Because otherwise, you would think the klal means anybody other than his relatives. So you need the words of Imo just to tell us what the klal includes.
That it means not.
That it means not relatives, right? In other words, klal prat would be when you have a klal, and then when you have a klal, and then you could have just stopped over there, and instead the Torah gives you a prat. Then you say in b'klal al mashu b'prat. But you know, among the yud gimel middos, we also have b'klal shoot sorich the prat, and b'prat shoot sorich l'klal. So that is those are cases. In other words, where you have a klal. But with the klal alone, you're not going to understand anything of what it's talking about. You need the prat just in order to explain what the klal is even talking about. So that we don't judge, that we don't rule as a regular klal or prat. So Tosfos goes into a long discussion about the ins and outs of klal or prat in this regard, and then why we need the kal v'chomer and also what about if we use ribuy or miyot instead of klal or prat? Would that make a difference? So Tosfos gets into a lot of discussion about the ins and outs of a lot of these things. So now the Gemara continues. We could, if we want, go through part of the Tosfos over here and learn it. I mean, we have time. It's a short block. So let's do that. So let's look at the Tosfos beginning on the fourth line of the widest lines, in the middle of the line.
Even if it were to say his father, not his mother,
how could you think that he could become tamei for his mother? And you would say his father not, because it's only chazaka, etc., like we said before. How could you think that? Of a typical in a kal v'chomer, can't you learn it by a kal v'chomer from his father? We said before, Madach HaKohen Hediyot is able to become Tomei for his brother from his father's side, but he can't become Tomei for his brother from his mother's side. So the same way a Kohen Gadol maybe could become, if a Kohen Gadol can't become Tomei for his father, then how could he become Tomei for his mother?
And anyway, it's
strange, because after all, the kal v'chomer can be darshin. So why can't we learn it that way? Why is the Gemara saying over here that you need la'oviv la'imay? Because otherwise you would have thought only one or not the other. Why aren't you learning from the kal v'chomer?
The nidal maharaf, so the Rabbeinu Peretz says, the Rabbi Akiva, the Dorish Minefesh Neis the Nazir, that according to Rabbi Akiva, that he's learning from the words nefesh meis that it says by a nazir, that, and the similar phrasing by the Kohen Gadol, the Krevim Ayri, that in both cases we're talking about relatives, and the Pasuk is saying you can't become Tomei for any of the relatives, im kain have a klal l'chol ha-krevim, then you have a klal that would include all the krevim. So if it mentioned afterwards a prat, if it says specifically afterwards, have amina in the klal al mashu prat, then you would think that it's one of the examples, klal or prat, ein b'klal al mashu b'prat, and therefore oviv ein imoy loy or ipcha. You would say only his father or only his mother, not the other way around. Kivin chiyash tam l'chalik b'neim, because after all, there is a logical reason, as our Gemara is saying, to distinguish between a father and a mother, that a father is only a chazaka versus the mother, her child's shevet doesn't go according to her. The kivin dehavi mitam klal or prat.
Once, if we were to learn as a klal of prat, and we were to say that it's limited only to the prat, then even if it said only one of them, if it said only oviv, we wouldn't be able to learn the imo even with kal v'chomer. Kama klal of prat to alma, just like in general a klal of prat. The in l'rabbis yosim and a prat loy b'kal v'chomer loy b'shem drasha acheres k'depreshes b'rei shloisha minin. Earlier, at the beginning of the previous parak, Tosfos, we had a whole discussion over there about the, this was during the time I was away. We had a whole discussion there in the Gemara about the mechanism of klal of prat and prat to klal and klal of prat to klal and prat to klal of prat. One point Tosfos made over there is that when the, now why is the Torah telling us a klal or prat? Why doesn't it just tell us the prat and have done with it? The reason is because if it only told us the prat, you could conceivably learn other things and include them using the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and Adrashas for him. Once it has a klal or prat, that automatically tells you it means only what's in the prat, nothing else. So therefore, so if in our case over here, since in effect we have a klal or prat, it says va'al kol nafshis meis, and then it says la'aviv. So if it only said la'aviv, we wouldn't be able to use a kal v'chomer to bring in imay, and vice versa, because that's the whole point of a klal or prat, is it blocks that kind of thing. So that is why it needed to say both of them, because we have a certain klal or prat over here. Then Tosfos goes on, the imtoma kiven dematam klal pratu. Well, if you're going to say it's on the basis of klal prat, imkain lomeli taima shenosin la'aviv mitam chazaka b'chem la'imim mishum b'lo ozo zara basra. Then fakir, question really, why does the Gemara need to say that we can't learn one from the other because each one has an advantage over the other? Typically, mehai taima, it should be enough to say because of that reason, the in b'klal ala mashu b'prat k'me ba'alma. If it were to say, we should say the reason why it needs to say both of them is exactly that, because you have a klal or prat and you can't learn one from the other because that's how a klal or prat works. Why does the Gemara instead need to mention a father has an advantage over the mother, a mother has an advantage over the father? What's the difference? And if they had no advantages, if both of them were the same thing, you'd still say ein b'klal ala mashu b'prat, and that prevents us from using any limud, any of the other midas shatur and adreshes behem, to add anything else to the prat. But oid kosher, and furthermore, we have to ask the mash makan b'dichtiv the imoy have yad in and kulam krovim kugan ochiv achosay. What are we saying over here in the Gemara? It's implying that once it says of the imoy, then it means also all the other relatives. V'amai again, why name a lo olam ein b'chalal al mash b'prat? Again, even if it says of the imoy, maybe it means only those two. Maybe it doesn't include any of the other relatives. The Eshloim, a shiny Isser Truma, the Gali Krub, a Kohen Hediot, Shematamal Krub, Lodo Chokim. After all, the Isser Truma is different. We find by a Kohen Hediot that he can become Tomei for relatives, just not for non relatives. Imkain, Besvara, de Kurva, Havatalia Milsa. So we would think it depends on how close they are. The Hilkoch, Tzorach, Litin, Taimab, Ovimimoi, Matsad Kurva, Yeshbeze, Yasmeze. So we still need a logical reason to explain. In other words, it's true. We would say, fine, you have a Klal of Prat over here. But after all, the Torah itself has clearly stated earlier that there's an exception for a Kohen Hediot, and the exception is for relatives. So therefore, you would say that even within the Prat over here, you would start figuring out which ones of the Prat are more, which of Aviv and Imoy, which one is closer to him in their various ways, and therefore the father, because your Shevet affiliation depends on him, or your mother, because you know for sure that she's your mother. And therefore you would have learned like that. The name and nami, the ma'ov of the ima, yodin ochavachose, and then we would say, sorry, not the name, the nicha nami. So therefore, so that also explains how we know, the ma'ov of the ima, yodin ochavachose, how from his father and his mother, how do we derive that the same as far as his sister and his brother, that he can't become tummy for them either. Shada in lacha oid tam lachalik, the kruvim, yoser, rachman beis tamim, mitzada av, mitzada ein. Because there's no logical reason to distinguish between relatives more than the two factors that it's mentioning over here in the Gemara, from the father and from the mother, could become as the Gemara explained over here. So once it says his father and his mother, automatically that includes his brother and his sister. Now you can't limit it to ein b'chlal ala mashu b'prat, because the very fact that we know that with a regular Kohen, you have an exception that he can become Tomei for any of his relatives. And on the other hand, by the Kohen Gadol and by the Nozer, it's telling us that he cannot become Tomei for his father and his mother. Once we establish in our Gemara over here that there's a reason why it had to say the father and there's a reason why it had to say the mother, then automatically that includes all the other relatives, because there's no reason to exclude them. So even though we would say in b'chlal ala mashu b'prat, here we would say that necessarily the prat has to include all the other relatives as well.
They wouldn't know from
me. So that he can't become Tomei for them either, because there's no logical reason to say, in other words, that he can't become Tomei for his father or his mother, but he should be able to become Tomei for his sister or his brother. There's no basis to say that. As I said, Tosfos goes on at some length to discuss this point further about klal or prat.
And yeah, one of the ideas is that maybe it's not really a klal prat, because it would be an example of one of those things. Maybe that mechlal should sort of the prat, but without the prat, you wouldn't know that you wouldn't understand the klal anyway.
Like what is an example?
So no, I mean you have. I mean we know that is one of the yudgim mitzvot in the drashas for him. There are here one example of that. For example, is when it says by kisi adam. When it says v'shofach has dami v'chisahu ba'ofer, you spill out the blood of the chaya or of the bird, and you cover it with dirt. Now, if it only said v'chisahu, now one would say that's klal or prat. V'chisahu is a klal, cover it. Ba'ofer would be a prat. So therefore, you would only be able to use dirt, nothing else. You wouldn't be able to use sawdust. You wouldn't be able to use sawdust is not offer. But the vote is because that's an example of a klal shot sarich the prat. If you only had the word b'chisahu could mean covering with anything. It could mean covering with a little pot or something. So therefore, the word ba'ofer clarifies what b'chisahu means. It means to cover it with some kind of substance that absorbs it, kind of. And therefore, so now we can learn. It means not only earth. It means you can use sawdust. You can use gold dust. You can use ashes, and so on and so forth.
What would be
So the klal would be the prat would have been the word ba'ofer. If you judge that as a klal or prat, you would say b'chisahu is a klal and ba'ofer is a prat, and it would mean you can't use anything else other than offer.
Okay.
But like this,
comes
because we're saying that b'chisahu itself is not b'chisahu itself doesn't really mean anything. It means to cover it, but what kind of covering are you talking about? Are you talking about covering it as in just like spreading something over it? Are you talking about covering it as in putting something over it that absorbs it, et cetera, et cetera? Yeah, so therefore, the ba'ofer
explains
the klal. So that's not called a klal of prat.
So it's not the second klal. Not the third klal explaining it. It's the actual prat.
So it's the actual prat. Right. Right. Okay. Continues the Gemara. So
in the case of the craving, why does it need? It implies automatically the other relatives. Why?
So that's what Tosfos is saying. Because our Gemara is telling us that there's a logical reason. You might have thought that maybe if he's not allowed to become Tomei for his father, he's allowed to become Tomei for his mother, and vice versa. But once we establish that that's not so, and the Torah does say individually, there's no logical basis to say he shouldn't be able to become Tomei for his father or mother, but he should be able to become Tomei for his sister or brother, etc. There's no logical basis for that. Therefore, even if we judge this as a klal or prat, then we're going to say that necessarily it has to include all the other relatives as well. So in other words, we would say the svara is like this. We would have said that no kohen is allowed to become tummy for anybody. The Torah carves out an exception for a kohen head yet for relatives. The Torah is, on the other hand, saying with a kohen gadol and nazir that he can't become tummy for his father or his mother. Once we say that, there's no reason to say that, on the other hand, the rest of the exception should apply to him, and therefore it means the entire exception is removed and there's no exception for any relatives.
And does spell out separately the coin head is allowed.
It's a by coin head, it mentions all the relatives, right? Okay, next the Gemara says, now according to Rabbi Akiva, why does the Pasuk say by the Kohen Gadol? So you have like this. By the Kohen Gadol and by the Nazir, it says separately by each one of them that they can't become Tomei. By the Nazir, the expression is Al Nefesh Meis Lo Yavoi. By the Kohen Gadol, the expression is Va'al Kol Nafshes Meis Lo Yavoi. So what is he doing particularly with the words Va'al Kol? What is he learning from the Kol, from the all? In fact, Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Zvachim where Rabbi Akiva learns
a little bit differently. He says nefesh. In our Gemara, we learned yesterday that nefesh means relatives, mace means even the rechotim, and we said la'aviv ani matame le'ima, but he can be matame for a mes mitzvah. Le'ima, we said even if he's a kohen and a nazir, he still becomes tame for a mes mitzvah. And la'achiv means that that even if he's a le'ima would mean if he's a regular kohen and a nazir. La'achiv would mean if he's a kohen gadol and a nazir. And la'chose would be the case of the Pesach and the Milah that we said yesterday. So in other words, the point is that we say that again, like we said, like Tosfos goes on to say over here, and like Tosfos goes on to say over here, the point is once we say that we have to say la'aviv la'imai for the reasons that it says in our Gemara over here, then we also have we can also learn from that the same thing is true as a so once you have that by a kohen gadol, then the same thing would apply to a nazir, and so and vice versa. If it says it by a nazir, it says it by it means it by a kohen gadol as well. So now what is he learning from the words for al kol nafshes meis? And the answer is he doubts like this: al kol la puki v'chokim. The word al kol. And that to all means la pukir b'chokim, means to exclude, that he can't become tamei for non-relatives. Or on the contrary, la puki does not mean la puki usually means to exclude. So here, Tosfos explains that it means that we derive from this pasuk, we derive from the words al kol, we derive that he cannot become tamei for relatives. Because it says al kol nafshes meis lo yavo. So the word al kol means non relatives.
Well, if you can do for mother and father, you can do for.
What we mean is, in other words, that before it says the father and the mother. First, we have to establish that there's a general issue on him becoming tamei for relatives. Then we can talk about aviv l'imay, that it teaches us even then, because like we said. So al kol by itself. Tosfos says by nazir, it also says al kol nefesh, and yet we didn't learn from al kol, we learned from nefesh. So rather, Tosfos says what it means is we're learning from the three words al kol nafshos. But since it says nafshos in the plural, then he's going to learn another drasha from the word nafshos as well. In other words, it said al kol nefesh, and it says al kol nafshos. So you have both, the fact that it says nefesh and the fact that it says nafshos. Meis la puki kroivim, the word meis, we learn from that he can't become tomei for relatives. Nefosh nafshos, when it says nafshos in the plural, that means la puki, that comes to teach us revius dam sheyotzim eshnei meisim. A revius of blood that came out of two mesim. Now, in the next Mishnah that we're going to have now, we're going to start talking about what kind, and in the following Mishnayos, we're going to talk about what kinds of tumas from a mes are full-fledged tumas daraisa that a nazir would have to shave and korbanos for, etc. Versus in later Mishnayos, we're going to talk about which ones are not. So now you have one of the things that's metamei a person is a revius of blood. So now what happens if that revius came from two different dead bodies, part of it from one and part of it from the other? So how do we know that that's also matamish and matame ba'oihel? How do we know that that's matame him if he's under the same oil with it? Shenemar, I'll call nafshois meis lo yavoi. Therefore, the pasuk says that he shouldn't come to any nafshois meis. Nafshois in the plural, meaning even if the blood came from two different mason. Now we're going to learn now in the coming Mishnah over here, we're going to say that only that you need more than that. You need half a log of blood in order for a nazir to become tamei and have to shave, etc. But a revius is enough to make him tamei with a lesser degree of tumah. So Rabbi Akiva said, since it says nafshos in the plural, then it means even if it came partially from one mess and partially from another. Balaturim on the pasuk actually mentions a cute thing. He says that in that pasuk, the al kol nafshos meis loy yavoi la'aviv ul'imoy loy yitama. Every pair of words in that pasuk ends with the same letter. The al kol, they both end with lamed. Nafshos meis, they both end with a saf. Lo Yove, they both end with an Aleph. Lo Aviv Lo Imai, both end with a Vav. Lo Yitama, both end with an Aleph. So every pair of words in the Pasuk has ends with the same letter. That's also a remez for this idea that you have two mesim and the revius of blood comes out of them, then it's still Matame. The point is, Nafshois refers to blood, as we find Ki Adam Hu HaNefesh.
So they could Arm Starif.
So they're Arm Starif, in other words, yeah. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Al elu tumas hanozim galeach. There are the following tumas that come from a mess that a nozir will have to shave and bring his korbanos, and then the whole 9 yards. Al a mess. Number one is an entire. Now the point is, in other words, that since the pasuk doesn't say when it talks about a nozir becoming tummy. It doesn't say the plain words ki yitama lenefesh, if it becomes tame by a dead body. Instead, it uses the expression b'chi yomus olav meis b'fes ha-pisay. If a meis dies in his presence all of a sudden. So that we learn from that, therefore, since it says b'chi yomus olav meis, that there are only certain kinds of tumors from a mess that a nozir will have to shave and bring korbanos and store it in the zeros over for. There are other kinds of tumors that we're going to talk about later on in the perek, in the following perek, that he does not have. The Rambam phrases it that the rule is any of the ones that a nozir has to shave for are considered tumas daraisa. All the other ones are not daraisa. Not everybody agrees with him. The Ravid, I think, disagrees with him and others. But in any case, so now first we're going to have the list of it's officially 12 kinds of tumah that a nozir will have to shave and bring korbanos and so forth. So number one, al mes, for a complete dead body, val kazayis min a mes, or for a kazayis of flesh from a mess. Now the Gemara is going to ask, the Gemara is going to point out, if we're saying a whole mess, if you have a kazayis, why do you need to mention a whole mess? So we'll see about that in the Gemara. The next one is val kazayis netzel. The third one is for a kazayis of netzel. Netzel is, and we're going to discuss in the Gemara, is where the body liquefies and then the liquid oozes out and eventually congeals. That kind of thing is called netzel. And the Gemara is going to point out that you have to be able to distinguish whether it's netzel from a mess or whether it's, for example, just saliva or whatever. But whatever, anyway, you have if you can recognize that this is netzel, then so kazayis of that. The next one is Valmaloi Tarvad Rokov, a ladle full of Rokov, of decayed dust from the body. The next one is Al Hashedra Val Gogolas, and also for a spine or for a head, a skull. Even if they're all by themselves, and even if there's no flesh on them at all. We're going to see in the Gemara, eventually, we're going to talk about whether we mean that it has to be both of them together or whether one or the other of them is enough.
Yes, actually touches.
Yes, actually, well, no, we're going to say that we're going to include Amagon, Vamason, Valahilon. All of them, Maga, Masa, and Oihel apply. We know that every kind of tumor a person becomes tummy by touching it. Some of them also by carrying it, even if he doesn't touch it. For example, you carry it in a box. And by a mess, uniquely, you have tumas oil. These that we're listing in the Mishnah, Maga, Masa, and Oihel apply to all of them with certain exceptions that we're going to talk about in the Gemara.
So Gogolas alone in the oil, you'll get from it.
Yeah. But that's what we're going to see in the Gemara, whether we're talking about a Shedra by itself or a Gogolas by itself, or whether only we're talking about both of them together. By the way, I mean, you have for this reason, it can be a bit problematic sometimes for Kohenim to go into museums where they have skeletons on display. You may have an issue with that. One mitigating factor maybe is that you have poskim who learn ultimately based on machlokas tanoim that maybe the bodies of goyim are not matamim ba'oil, and the ones they have on display in these museums are usually bodies of goyim, so there may not be an issue. I mean, if they have them inside glass cases and they're covered, it may not be an issue anyhow. Then those are then you have an oil on tumah, so then they're within an oil, so it may not be an issue, but there can sometimes be problems with it. Next, Val Evam and a mess, also for a limb that came off of a dead body, Val Evam and a chai, or if it came off a living person. She, in either case, she yesh all of bosa karoi if there is enough flesh on them, which means enough that if the enough flesh that the organ would be able to heal and to be able to regenerate that. In other words, let's say you have, if this limb was, if this finger or whatever it was still attached to the person, and it had, is there enough flesh on it that the, that it would be able to heal? You would have a scar left, fine, but in other words, it would be able to heal. The limb wouldn't die and have to be cut off. So if you have enough flesh on that limb, whether it came from a chai or from a mess, then it's also metame b'mago of maso loyal. When it's detached, when it's still attached, obviously it's not metame. No, what we're talking about is, in other words, when if it was cut off a living person, this is, for example, we had the example the other day of Yosef HaKoyen with his leg being amputated. The example with a mess would be similarly, that if you have that, it was attached to the mess, now it's detached. So even though it doesn't have a kezias of flesh on it, but because it has bosa lahalas arucha, had were it still attached to the person, and if he was still alive, it would be able to heal and remain attached to the body, then therefore that's considered, therefore it's still metame.
Even though now it can't.
Even though, well, now the person's dead anyway.
Yeah. No, I'm saying it's if he's alive, but
it's detached, right? But if it had remained attached, then yeah, that would be enough. Yeah.
No, I'm saying if it's like this brother coin that this previous it was severed, so that leg is still
going to be that leg is going to be metame.
It can regrow now,
right? Because when it was, because if it was still attached to the body, it would be able to regrow. That's the point. That's what we mean. Sheyesh al basa karoy. There's enough flesh on it to there's enough flesh on it that if it was still attached, yeah, yeah. Next, v'achatzi kav atzamos. The next thing is for a half a kav of bones. So we don't mean. Tosfos explains that based on the Gemara later on, that what we mean is that this chatzi kav atzamos originally came from roiv minyanoi or roiv minyanoi. Now you have like this. There's roiv minyanoi. There's most of the number of bones in the human body. There are 248 evarim in the human body. So the majority of those is 125. By the way, I mean, if you look in modern medical literature, they'll say that the normal number of bones in the human body is 206, which is less than 248. But first of all, they're not counting certain things. For example, the kneecap, they don't count as a true bone. It's called, in medicalese, they call it a sesamoid, and you have a few other examples like that. Second of all, also, bones fuse together as a person gets older. That's why when you're younger, you're more flexible. And when you're older, then your body is not as flexible because various bones fuse together. When we talk about 248 evarim, we can mean particularly at a younger age before they all fuse together. Whatever the case, the number in halacha of evarim that it's considered that a person has is 248. There's a Gemara in Bechoros that talks about maybe women have more. There's different opinions over there. Anyway, but the normal number is 248. So therefore, the majority of that is 125. That's called roiv minyan. Roiv binyan would be most of what's needed to make up the height of a person, which is two thigh bones and one leg bone, or two leg bones and two thigh bones and one leg bone, or one thigh bone and two leg bones. So now, if you have out of that, so now if those bones were further broken up, and so you don't have the whole bones alone, but now you have a total of a half a calf of bones that came from a collection of bones like that, then that would also be metame b'mago of maso v'oil. In other words, the point is that if you have, for example, the whole thigh bone and two leg bones or vice versa, then even if they don't amount to a half a cab in volume, they're also going to be metame. But on the same thing, if you only have 125 bones, even if they don't make up a half a cab, they're also metame. Here we're talking about you had 125 bones, for example. Now they got broken up. All you have left is fragments of those, but the fragments add up to at least a half a cab. So that's enough to also be metame.
So 125 is less than half.
125 is just over half. 125 out of 248. So continues the Mishnah. Va'achatzi loig dam, also for a half a log of blood. Now, again, what it is we just learned at the end of the previous Gemara, and we're going to talk about it later on in the parak, that that even a revius of blood is enough to be metame a person ba'oihel. But again, as far as a nazir, and the idea is, as Gemara mentions in some places, a revius of blood is the minimum that a person needs in order to live. It's a little hard to understand that. Medically, one possibility is we're talking about, let's say, a newborn baby. Their heart and their circulatory system is very small, so conceivably you could have, they could just barely get by with a revius of blood, at least until they get a blood transfusion. Anyway, the point is, a revius is considered to be the minimum that life depends on. So therefore, revius is already enough to be metamin ba'oil. However, for a nazir to shave and bring this carbonus, again, you need a larger amount. So therefore, the amount is, Tosfos points out, this is an example of shiurin halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that the various shiurin, what you need for what you need a kezias, for what you need a revius, for what you need more, all those things are halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So that's how it is. So v'chatzi log dam, and also for a half a log of blood that came from a mess. All of those, almagon v'almason v'alahilon, all of those, whether a person touches them or carries them without touching them, for example, in a box, or whether he's in an oiho with them, which of course could be several possibilities. He stands over them, they're standing over him, he's in the same room as them, etc. So all of those. And one more, v'al etzim kesa'ora amagoy v'amasoy, also for a bone that's the size of a grain of barley, but only for touching it or carrying it, not for tumas oil. The concept of tumas oil only applies if you have a larger amount of bones, like we said. All of those, al elu anozim galeach, for all of these tumas that we mentioned in our Mishnah, anozim will have to shave, umaze b'shlishi u'b'shvi, and he'll have to be sprinkled with parah aduma water on the third and seventh day. He's going to lose the days of his nazirus up until this point, depending on the various circumstances that we learned in the Masechta so far. He may lose all of them. According to Rabbi Eliezer, sometimes he may lose only 30 of them, and so on and so forth. The Ena Maska Libnis ad Labshi Yitor, maybe as Kabinaisav, he can only start recounting his nazirus after he becomes Tahar and after he brings his Korbanus. But the korbanos being tomei, right? So Tosfos points out actually that the words v'yavi korban or maybe as korbanosav don't really belong in the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to end up discussing who our Mishnah is like, and then whether it follows the Chachamim or whether it follows the Chachamim or Rabbi Eliezer. And therefore, and depending on that is what we're going to say whether you need to bring us korbanos before he restarts his nazirus. Okay.
What's the equivalent between a lug and a hin?
A hin is about a gallon, give or take. A lug is 1/12. What is a lug relative to a hin? Is 1/12 of that. A log is 1/12 of a hin, so therefore a log comes out to around a pint, give or take. You think of it, a log is 4 revius. So revius, you have Rabbi Avram Chaim Noah holds that a revius is around 3 ounces. The Chazon Ish holds it's closer to 5 ounces. So therefore, a log is going to be 4 times that, 12 ounces or 20 ounces, respectively. And then a hin would be 12 times that. So a little over a gallon.
144 ounces.
Let's say about if you say that a log is 12 ounces, then yeah, a hin is going to be 144 ounces. Yeah,
it's bigger.
Why do we need for blood? We use a log, and for oil we use a hin.
We don't. The only place a hin is used in the Torah is for the Shemen HaMishpah. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Menachos that. The Gemara tells us in Menachos that they had various measuring cups in the Beis Mikdash. One of them was they had a measuring cup for a hin. Now, why do you need that? The Gemara says, the fact is, there's no time when you actually need a hin. When it comes to the korbanos, you need a third of a hin, a quarter of a hin, a half a hin, etc. Where are you ever using a one hin? And the answer is, since they had that when Moshe made the Shemen HaMishkah, then they kept it. They kept the hin measurement, even though they never had a reason to use it again.
That
was only a one-time thing. Other than that, when the Pasuk mentions the wine and the oil that you have for the korbanos, it mentions in terms of a half a hin, a third of a hin, a quarter of a hin, etc. But yeah, I mean, in turn, a hin is composed of 12 logim.
And the Shemen HaMishcha was used for what?
It was used for anointing the Kohanim and the Kalim of the Mishkan. And also, and in later times, it was used for anointing the Kohanim Golem. We talked the other day about the Kohen God of Mashuach B'Shem and HaMishcha. It was also used for anointing the Mashuach Melchama, the one who made the announcements before they went to war. And it was also used for anointing the kings of Beis David, specifically when there was a Machloikus. The Gemara explains in Hodius that if a king succeeded his father without any problems, they didn't need to anoint him. But whenever there were problems, for example, before Shlomo became king, his brother Adoniyahu tried to seize the kingship for himself when they made Yehoyash the king. You had Asalia, who had wiped out the whole family, and she was ruling as queen. So those kinds of examples, they had to anoint the new king to demonstrate that he's the legitimate king, but otherwise not.
She did all that.
Yeah.
Oil did they use to anoint a king?
It doesn't say how much they used, but it actually does say the Gemara mentions, Rashi brings it on the pasuk, that there was a nest that none of it ever got used up. The entire 12 lugim that Moshe made are still kayim, continue to exist in future generations, and it'll be available again. Okay, anyway, let's start with a piece of the Gemara over here. So the Gemara tells a story, Tanan Rabbanan. After the mayor passed away, and his talmidim want to go and learn Torah by a new rebbe, Amalehen Rabbi Yehuda l'talmidav. So Rabbi Yehuda says to his talmidim, "Al yukonsu talmidim of mayor l'kan." The talmidim of Rabbi Meir should not come here into the Beis Medrash. Because they're troublemakers. They're not coming. They're not coming to learn. They're coming to not so much to asking questions is good, but like to ask bothersome questions. They're not going to really come to learn Torah. They're really only coming to, literally, the kapcheni means to cut me off, but in other words, to give me tsar when it comes to halachas. Like, they want to show off. They want to show off as look how sharp we are, that we know things that you don't, that you don't know. Nevertheless, Dochak Sumchus v'nichnas. Sumchus pushed his way in and came in. Sumchus was one of the Talmidim of Rav Meir.
Very famous.
Yeah, we have him in many places in Chas. Yeah, and in the discussion, while they were discussing halacha, Omalehem, at one point Sumchus says to Rav Yehuda and his Talmidim, "Kach shonali Rav Meir. This is how Rav Meir taught me the Mishnah." We know the Mishnah existed in some form or other long before Rebbe. There were different versions of Mishnayos floating around among them. Each Tana had his own way of teaching his Talmidim. The Mishnayos that we have are basically based on the ones of Rav Meir. Rebbe ended up taking the Mishnayos of Rav Meir and using them as a basis for the Mishnayos that we have. Anyway, so Sumcha says, this is how Rebbe taught me. This is how Rebbe Meir taught me. Separately, that a nozer has to shave and bring his karbonis and so forth for a mess and for a kazayis min a mess. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda's version did not have both of those. Rabbi Yehuda agreed with Halacha, of course, but his version of the Mishnah didn't have both of those because it would be repetitious. So, cost Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda got angry. But Omar Lahan, he says to his Talmidim, "Loi kach amarti lachem al yikonsu talmidim Rav Meir lakan v'meshe kantaron in hain." Didn't I tell you not to let Rav Meir's Talmidim in here because they're just coming in order to show off and in order to provoke? Al kazayis min ames megaleach al ames lekoshekin. If you shave, the nazir has to shave for even a kazayis for a mess, how much more so for an entire mess? So why is Rav Meir's version saying both of them? However, Omer Rav Yossi, but when Rav Yossi heard what's going on, he said, "Yomru." Now people are going to say, "Meir Shochav." Rav Meir has passed away. Shochav literally means he lay down. That's the respectful term you use when a Talmud Chacham has passed away. Yehuda Koas. Yehuda is getting angry. Yossi Shosak, and Yossi meaning myself, is being quiet. So that means, in other words, that people are going to think that, you know what, we've slugged up Rav Meir. We can't do that. We have to find a way to explain what Rav Meir said. Look, if Rav Meir himself was alive, he could defend himself, but he's not. So I have to stand up on his behalf and explain at what the Lashon is that he meant. Sumchus said what Rav Meir had said. He didn't. First of all, he didn't necessarily explain why Rav Meir used this double Lashon. And second of all, even if he did, he's one of the Talmidim. Rabbi Yossi wants that there should be somebody on the level of Rabbi Yehuda to be able to explain it, that Rabbi Yehuda should accept it. So he says, Torah Mata Heoleh, what's going to be with the Torah that Rabbi Meir taught the Torah? What's going to happen with it? Therefore, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Yvon Nitzucha Elol Mescha Ein Elol Kazayis Basar. So Rabbi Yossi says, you should know the chidush of what Rabbi Meir is saying is even a mess that does not have a kazayis of flesh on him. Meaning, in other words, imagine you have, for example, a baby that was a very early developed baby that was stillborn. It's very small. It doesn't yet have even a kazayis of flesh on it. So mitzad a kazayis, then you can't be metame the person. But because it's a mess shalom, because it's a complete human body, therefore that's reason enough to be metame. That is why Rabbi Meir had to say separately, al mes, al kazayis min mes, because you can have the normal cases, you would have a kazayis, which is only a small part of a larger body, but you could have a case where a body is itself less than a kazayis and still it's metame.
It doesn't matter how small it is.
Well, that's because it's a complete body. But the Gemara still says, va'adayin yoimar, still, why would that appease Rabbi Yehuda? Why would he say that? Okay, that's a good reason for a mayor to say his expression. Still, Rabbi Yehuda could argue back. Al evum imenu megaleach. After all, you have to, the Nazir has to shave, we said in the Mishnah, even if there's only one limb that came from the body, even though there wasn't a kazayis of flesh on it. Al kulay lekol shekein, how much more so for the entire body? So again, still, why do you need to say al ames? So Ella, rather, we can answer. We have a different statement that Rabbi Yochanan says in connection with a different Mishnah. You have a Mishnah in Arlos, which also mentions, it lists the things that are metame ba'oihel, and there also you have, it mentions mes and kezayis min ames, and you have the same question, why the repetition? And Rabbi Yochanan explains over there, l'nitzucha, that was only needed for Ella l'nefel shalim iskashu evar begidin, when you have a stillborn baby that a miscarriage where the limbs are not yet connected with Gideon. So in other words, so you have the baby is starting to form in the womb, but you don't yet have the Gideon, the tendons or whatever it is that connect one part to the other. So now the point is, when we talk about an aver, a limb in the body that is metame, it has to be aver kibriyose. It has to be an aver the way it comes off the body. Basar v'gidim v'atzamis. It has to include flesh and gidim and bones. So here you don't have any gidim yet. The gidim haven't yet started forming in the baby, or at least not what? Maybe at least you can't see. Maybe you could see them under a microscope, but at least with the naked eye you wouldn't see them. So therefore the point is that even though the baby is already starting to be formed, it doesn't yet have visible gidim. So therefore that wouldn't be considered the equivalent of an aver min ames. The same way, Hochanami, the same way we could say over here, B'nefel, Sh'niskashu, Evar Begidin, you could be talking about Rav Meir's Alames is referring to a baby, a stillborn baby like that, that does not yet have Gidim, and that was saying that the Gidim are not visible yet, so it wouldn't be Metamim, it's sad the fact that it's an Aver, but it would be Metamim, it's sad the fact that it's a whole human body. Rava Omar, Rava says, another way you could explain, another meaning of alames would be that suppose you have, like we said before, the two thigh bones and one leg bone, or one thigh bone and two leg bones, so that's roi binyonai, or the roi binyonai, or the 125 bones, she'en behen roi v'atzomos, even if there's not a quarter cab of bones in them, and we said in the Mishnah a half a cab of bones, but we're saying that when it comes to, again, we're going to learn in a later Mishnah that even a quarter cab of bones is metame. It's just not enough to make a nazir shave and so on and so forth. But here, if you have 125 bones, or you have the two leg bones and one thigh bone and so forth, even though that can still be called al-hames, and that is enough to make a nazir have to shave for. So that's another meaning of al-hames. And that was bothering Rabbi Yehuda. Alames means even in that case, even though you don't have a complete body, but you have enough that can be considered a majority of the mess, then that is enough for him to be metame the nazir, even though there's no kazayis of flesh because you have just bones without any flesh on them. Nevertheless, then you still then still metame, even though you don't have a quarter calf altogether.
Again, you could be talking about a cane, let's say, from a baby, where a majority of their bones doesn't amount to a quarter of a calf.
So it's because it's the whole body.
Because the majority of a body, right. Yeah. So that's another way of explaining the mayor's statement of Alames that was bothering Rabbi Yehuda. Alames would be that. Or Kazayas min Ames would be the regular case. We have a Kazayas of flesh. Okay.
Well,
everyone.